I'm delighted to welcome you to the first episode of Women with AI, which we've launched on International Women's Day 2024. And I'm very excited to be welcoming our first guest. But before we start the podcast, let me tell you a little bit about her. Our guest today is the one and only Sophia Matviva. Sophia is the CEO and founder of Tech for Non-Techies, an executive education and consulting company. She has contributed to the Harvard Business Review, Financial Times, The Guardian, and Forbes on entrepreneurship and technology, and hosts the top-rated Tech for Non-Techies podcast. So I'm sure I'm going to be safe in her hands today. She has also guest lectured at the University of Chicago, the London Business School, and Oxford University. She is a startup mentor at the Chicago Booth Polsky Center of Entrepreneurship and has advised leading accelerators, including Chicago Booth's New Venture Challenge and the Techstars Blackstone Launchpad. She holds an MBA from Chicago Booth and a BSc Honours in Politics from Bristol. She speaks English, Russian, and French, and Sophia also sits on the advisory board to Riveter, which uses AI to predict customer trends for the world's biggest brand. Sophia Matviva, welcome to Women with AI.
Jo, I'm so happy to be here, and I'm really excited about the day that this is coming out on, International Women's Day. And, you know, as the AI revolution is spreading, I think the conversation and the show that you are creating is going to be so important, because if we are not careful, you know, the inequalities that are so prevalent in the tech industry, they're just going to be scaled with AI, which we don't
want. Thank you. That's perfect, because this podcast is dedicated to amplifying the voices and perspectives of the women in the field of artificial intelligence. So let's start with the basics. I'm sure our audience probably know a lot more about AI than I do, but as the host of Tech for Non-Techies and you're speaking to a non-tech person, what is AI?
So the way I like to think about it is it's basically machines doing things that we could have done before, or that we could still do. So really simple things. You could give a machine instructions to book you a table. This is literally what open table software does. So I need a table for two people at 7 p.m. in central London. And then there is an algorithm which helps you make that reservation. So previously, what did we do before open table existed? We would pick up the phone, we would make a bunch of phone calls, maybe we would have a secretary if we were really fancy to go and do that. So you see, it's a simple task that is automated that, you know, machines can now do. So that's simple AI. And then when we get into generative AI, it's basically when AI can make things. So can AI make new information? So with this open table, there is no new stuff that it's making. It's literally just completing a task for you. Whereas generative AI is basically taking data that already exists and then changing it into something new and generating a new text, for example. Does that make sense?
So, and it's to save time, really, isn't it? I think that was probably the first reason. Well, not the first reason, but that's the main thing that it does. It sort of frees up time.
To save time, and for a business, that means time is money, right? To save time and to save money, and also scale. So in general, I like to think of technology as allowing us to save time, to save money, to be more efficient, and to be more secure. So generally, those are the four things that technology allows us to do. So not every single one, not every single technology is going to be able to do all four. But so, for example, you and I currently, we are in different parts of London right now, and people are going to hear this podcast all around the world. So essentially, our wisdom is being amplified by technology, so we're being scaled. And it's also, you know, being done at an efficient way. So we don't have to get a room together, get everybody flights to come and see us. It's, you know, people can listen to us. So we're scaling geographically, but also it's efficient because essentially everybody can stay at home and carry on, I don't know, doing the dishes or whatever they're doing when they're listening to us. And so software, whether it's AI or whether it's just, you know, a normal algorithm, essentially it's scalability, efficiency, cost, and security. Those are the things that it gives us. And that's why businesses are so excited about it, because essentially it allows businesses, if used properly, to increase profits.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, as a businesswoman, something I'm always interested in.
Definitely. So how do you use AI in your daily life?
You know, I think, so I'll tell you how I use AI consciously, because all of us use AI unconsciously.
I don't think we realize how many devices we all have.
Like, I have a slightly unhealthy TikTok habit.
I use Siri, I use Alexa.
So that's me using AI unconsciously, because TikTok keeps on feeding me videos that keep me stuck to TikTok, as opposed to, you know, reading research papers on AI, which is what I should be doing. So that there's a lot of unconscious use of AI that we all do. But some of the conscious things, especially for people who have any kind of content creation, AI is absolutely fantastic. But you've got to be careful here. Because, for example, as I mentioned, I have the Tech for Non-Techies podcast, and some of our interviews are video interviews, so they go onto YouTube. So previously, what we would do before AI is that my social media assistant would literally cut clips, so find the most interesting bits, cut tiny clips, and then put those tiny clips on TikTok or on Instagram or on LinkedIn for people to watch. And obviously, that took my assistant time, and that's time that I have to pay for. Now we have an AI tool called Video AI, where we literally just put in the clip, it finds the bits that it somehow decides are interesting, and then it clips them into tiny reels, which then go up into social media. So what I want people to see here is that, yes, it's AI, and yes, it definitely helps, and it takes the content that we already have, and it scales it. But where I am not using AI is, I am not using, say, ChatGPT 4 to create content and then to pass it off as my own. And I think this is where the debate is essentially, can you just get ChatGPT as, you know, somebody who's a content creator, or like if you want to be a thought leader, like can you have really interesting, intelligent content created, and then can you pitch it as an article to the Financial Times and get it published? So right now, that is not the case.
Funny.
So right now, I definitely do use ChatGPT to get ideas, to kind of debate, to like, you know, sometimes you're staring at a blank piece of paper and you're thinking, I've got to write something really smart, and there's nothing happening in my head right
definitely.
Now.
Definitely. And I think, sorry, it kept freezing, but I've caught up now.
Yeah.
We can cut that bit out. But that's how I use ChatGPT as well. I use it to get ideas, because it's like it's given you the basics that then you can work off. So that's how it saves time for me. But I was just checking that you could hear me or that I hadn't frozen. Sorry.
On Riverside, sometimes there is a delay just because of all the things that actually the AI is doing in the background. But you know, one of my clients, she actually is a professor of AI at Texas A&M University, which is one of the top universities in the US and the top in Texas. And, you know, the Texans think that they're basically, well, that they're a law unto themselves. Anyway, so she's a professor of AI that I actually interviewed on my podcast. And she says that she sees ChatGPT as her intern. So clever, very keen, you know, that kind of like kind of Hermione from Harry Potter. Really keen, has read everything, but has no actual life experience. And so really sweet, but you probably shouldn't pass Hermione's work off as your own, at least when she's a 13-year-old.
Agreed.
Right? So useful for research. Take what Hermione is giving you. But then as a senior person with experience, you know nuance. You know what's really happening in the industry. But it's really helpful to have something to essentially critique it, because often I'll ask ChatGPT something and then it'll give me an answer and I'll think, oh, this is wrong. This is completely incomplete. This is missing a core crucial point. And then I basically start writing something original and interesting as a response to the incomplete thing that I get.
Yeah, completely.
Does that make sense?
I think AI is making us more creative in a way. Would you agree? Is that how you see it?
It's making us... So if you use it properly, because if you like, I remember we had, when it first came out, and, you know, my social media assistant, he's quite young, very keen, so kind of like Hermione, very keen, quite young, not yet hugely experienced. And so I thought, okay, well, I'm writing all of these newsletters, you know, as you said, I've written for the Harvard Business Review, so how about we take the content that I've created and essentially ask ChatGPT to create some social media posts based on what I've said. And so we tried that and it was a disaster. Because I was like, I have original thought there and literally all originality has just been squeezed out. And it's just become, you know, generic inspirational business stuff, which is really, really boring. And if we had just posted that, like, I would have been thoroughly ashamed because you can tell. But essentially we looked at it and we're like, okay, no, this is not enough. But we know where it's not enough. And so we could change it. And I think AI makes you more creative when you respond to it. When you decide that, okay, this is not enough. This is where I could, this is where my human creativity is going to matter. Whereas I think some people mistakenly think, oh, I'm just going to, you know, ask it something and then I'm going to post it and then good things will happen. And most of the time, that's not going to work. And most of the time, people can
agree.
Tell.
And especially being based in the UK, it always has an American spelling or an American voice, even if you tell it that you're in the UK or that it's for that audience. And that's the well, not the problem, but the issue is that it doesn't know the nuances of your own audience and what you want to say. So, I mean, do you see that it's taking sort of potentially... it's freeing up time and it's handling those junior roles and those junior tasks. I mean, do you think that is of special sort of significance for women sort of in this industry? You know, is it sort of those roles that women would normally take that are now maybe at risk if it's sort of the junior interns? I mean, you said your social media intern was a male, so clearly not. It was probably going to affect everyone. But yeah, what do you think the risks are?
Well, so... there are risks unless you take the future into your own hands, basically. So I can literally talk about my social media assistant. He has become more productive because he has learned how to use AI tools. Because there's a whole bunch of stuff I need him to do. Like, if I possibly could get him to be awake and working for me 24/7, that would be amazing. But, you know, apparently he has human rights and needs to sleep,
well,
so
AI
we're not allowed to do that.
Not yet, anyway.
and so, you know, my to-do list for him is as long as my arm. But with AI, that means that, for example, he's not sitting there and trimming videos. He gets the AI to trim the videos and, you know, about 60% of the results that he gets are good. So he throws out the other 40 and then he uses AI to find the right times to post things, which means that he can then be creative. And then I can say to him, okay, you know, I am looking. So one of the things that we are now doing is we're working more and more with law firms. So when law firms want to work with tech clients, that's a really perfect client for us because they're a non-technical audience. They don't need to become a technical audience, but they need to understand technology so they can serve their clients better. And so I can say to him, look, this is the audience that I need. Can you go and find, you know, places where I can write an op-ed or podcasts that lawyers listen to and so on.
Okay.
And so that means that he is more productive because he's learned to use these tools. However, if people that, you know, if I wasn't his boss, And if I didn't have essentially knowledge of AI and knowledge of creativity, and also if I wasn't entrepreneurial, then I would like, well, okay, well, you can't do this. So this job is eliminated. So there's a really great phrase that I heard from a Harvard Business School professor, Karim Lakhani, who said that it's not AI that's going to take jobs. It's humans who know how to use AI who are going to take jobs. Yeah. And I think... This is it. And like, we're now at this point where we can decide. It's up to us. We can decide, is AI going to make me more productive? Because can I then go and say to an employer, look, I can do all of these tasks and I can do all of these tasks basically with the same amount of time. Like, you're hiring one person who can really do the task of three. So you can do that, or you can think, okay, well, my job is being eliminated. That's it.
Spotting those opportunities.
It's up to
us. And, you know, this is International Women's Day. So, and I think that we need to be looking at AI as an empowerment tool for women. And so I think we need to encourage more women to get into this field, to learn how to use it. And how do you see the best ways to do that?
You know, so unfortunately, have you heard that term, office housework?
No.
So it's like, you know, when you're in an office and there's just like it's somebody's birthday and then a cake needs to be organized, or like somebody's leaving and then a card needs to be bought and a gift. So usually it's the women that are tasked with these things. So, I mean, it would make sense that, you know, the office manager or the secretary is going to do that. Because that's kind of, you know, if it's a team secretary and somebody in the team is leaving, that makes sense. But even when it's actually not, you know, let's say that there are male partners and female partners in a marketing firm. Generally, this kind of office housework, this drudgery, falls onto women. And, you know, there are all sorts of reasons why that happens, and it's crap and it happens. And so, you know, ladies, when you're listening to this, think about all the cakes
all
that
the
you bought,
you
all those
bought.
Cards that you bought, all that. And like remembering when it's somebody's birthday, babies, all of that stuff, all of that brain capacity, right? And you are not going to get promoted, and you're not going to get paid more because you went to M&S and bought the cake.
Totally agree.
And yet, so you're not going to get promoted for it. You're not going to get paid
more,
but yet you were doing it. Yeah. And like it sucks, right? And so women in general are tasked with these, you know, bits of office drudgery. And we can't use AI to do everything, but AI is going to allow us to eliminate at least some of that drudgery. I mean, we still can't have like robot cake deliveries.
Well, you can in some places.
actually, yes, you can. So at least some of that drudgery. And because women in particular tend to be given more of the admin, even when they are super senior, I think the way we fight that is, you know, we fight that by saying, no, why am I doing this? And I remember I was working at a company, and we were in a meeting room, and there was a guy who was more junior than me, and I was asked to go and get the printouts and give them to everybody. And I said, well, why doesn't he go do it? And literally I was told, oh, you know, Sophia, don't make a fuss.
And awful.
And I literally just thought, well, I mean,
I can feel the anger inside just on your behalf that even happened. But it does.
Yeah. But, you know, it's this kind of like everyday sexism happens to all of us, right? And so on one hand, we do need to try to stand up for ourselves when we can. But also, frankly, sometimes it's not politically expedient. And this is, I hate saying that, but sometimes it's true. So we need to stand up when we can. But other times when actually, you know what, like I'm not going to go and spend my political capital on fighting this. I can just get AI to do whatever this nonsense is. So I can spend the rest of my time actually doing strategic work that wins the account and that gets me paid more. So I think, you know, I'd love to say that, yes, let's all go and, you know, fight. But sometimes, like it's unrealistic to say that we can fight every single injustice, and also still, you know, get on the account that we want, get the client that we want, and get the promotions that we want. And you know, as an aside, there is this audiobook that I listened to, which I really loved. It's called Machiavelli for Women.
I'll put a link to that in the show notes.
It's nothing to do with AI, but it's just, you know, the reality of, okay, what's it like to be a woman in the workplace? You can't openly fight every injustice, but you can be smart about it.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's the thing, because women are great at multitasking. And I think maybe that's one of the things that you can use AI for as well, because it can be doing lots of different things, or you're using lots of different tools to do things. Do you think AI, do you see it as being more female or male, or does that not matter?
Bill?
Did you lose me?
Oh, we had a bit of a laugh. Could you say that again?
Yeah. I said, I said that women are great at multitasking, and we can do lots of things at once. And I think that's what AI is good for, because you can have either lots of different tools running, or you're using it to do lots of things, or it's freeing up time so you can do more things. Do you think AI is viewed as being female or male, or does it not matter? Or is it how, is it who's interacting?
So I actually, so it's interesting, because a lot of the time AI tools are created to be female. So if you look at Alexa, Siri, all of them, they have female voices, which is interesting, because, you know, we are socialized to believe that giving commands to a woman is fine. Yeah. Like giving our orders to a woman is okay. Whereas if it was a man, like, oh no, we can't give orders to a man. I actually do think that there are some pretty dark things in gender socializations in terms of AI, which, you know, we need to question, especially, I would say, for those who have children, because we don't notice it. You know, like, I didn't notice the whole, like, that AI voices tend to be female in that way until somebody said that to me, and I was like, oh, that's really true. And I would say that to people who have children. When you have, say, Alexa in your house, you are unconsciously programming kids to think that barking orders at a woman is fine.
Yeah.
And I mean, we all kind of fall for this socialization. So I certainly do too. So I'll just say, just try to be as conscious and aware of it as possible. And in terms of, I think, what women can do to participate in the AI conversation is, A, well, just use the thing. Use as much as possible. But also, if something is rubbish and it doesn't work, then question why it doesn't. So if, for example, you work in an organization that maybe makes an AI tool, you know, going back to law firms, lots of law firms, especially the big law firms, you know, Magic Circle, the huge international law firms, they are using all of their case history to make their own AI tools. And so you can actually influence, you can actually say, like, okay, I'm getting really terrible results in this. Why is that? And I think that confidence to just, you know, to say and to speak up and to say, this isn't working for me, this needs to be fixed. This is the one takeaway that I would want women to have from this conversation, is that these are not fixed things. A lot of the time they are created by men who don't have the problems that we do, who don't face the issues that we do.
Yeah.
And so often they would program things into the AI that that definitely don't work for us, but they didn't do it maliciously. They just don't know. And it's like, do you know the story of when the Apple Watch was first released?
No, and I'm wearing one now, so now I feel bad that I don't know.
So this was ages ago. This was I think I did an episode on it. I don't remember. Anyway, so this was ages ago when it was first released. So, you know, all these Apple engineers who, you know, paid a fortune got up to unveil the Apple Watch, and it was a bunch of guys, and they were saying, oh, you know, it tracks all of your metrics. It even, you know, your heart rate, how much you've walked. It even tracks how much beer you drank. And it's like, oh, yay, great. And then somebody in the audience, happened to be female, said, and does it track the menstrual cycle?
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, no, didn't think of that. But it tracks everything. Yeah. It tracks everything apart from this thing that happens every month to 50% of the population.
I know, ridiculous, because I do use it for that as well. But the hilarious, someone at work, he said he'd got his Apple Watch and he said, oh, it does cycle tracking. And he literally thought it was to sack his bicycle rides into work. I was like, no, it's not that kind of cycle.
Yeah, you don't have one of these, honey.
But it's the same with everything. You know, the crash test dummies, for example, all the statistics, mm-hmm. everything, all the accidents, the way the seatbelts are designed, everything has always been for men. And I think it was only
the default is male.
Been, and I don't even know if it was the 1990s. I think it might have been the early 2000s. I'm not sure. I'll have to double check that they actually thought, oh, maybe we should see how it affects a woman's body if she's wearing a seatbelt.
Is it?
Yeah. And as a result, more women have died in car crashes. And so what I would say to women is that this happens at very large companies which hire apparently the best people in the world and pay them a ton of cash. And they make these, excuse me, but kindergarten blunders. You know, they make these idiotic mistakes and they are still making them. And so what I would say is that if you are using a tool and you just see some obvious stupidity, don't dismiss it. I think we as women, we often tend to think, oh, you know, I'm probably doing something wrong. Enough. Oh, I didn't use it properly. Yeah, like it's my fault. We think, oh, there's something that I did that I don't understand and it's my fault. Well, actually, a lot of the time it isn't. A lot of the time it just wasn't made for you. And it should be, because if you're using it, clearly you're a target
user. And that's
why
we need our seat at the table, because we do make up 50% of the population. So,
Well, more now.
I mean, and because you've built AI, haven't you? And so you don't even need to be a completely techie person. So can you tell us
absolutely
about that?
Absolutely not. So, you know, it's interesting. So if I had known that I was going to build an AI algorithm before I started doing it, I would have freaked out. But I kind of didn't know that this is what I was doing. I only realized what I was doing when it was already happening. So I'll tell you what happened. So my first tech company was a retail tech business. So we had a consumer app where women would take photos of what they wanted to wear or buy and ask professional stylists for their feedback. Like, should I wear this skirt with this dress, or should I buy this even though, you know, it's the wrong color, but it's 80% off?
Always tempting.
And so, it's lime green and it's two sizes too small, but it's Dolce & Gabbana and it's 80% off. I mean, we've all been there, right? And so there was the consumer bit, and then that would allow us to see what people were buying or not buying, and then sell that data analyzed to retailers and to brands. And we needed to decide how people who would download our app, you know, you could also see what other people were wearing or what other people were buying, you know, there was a content feed. And some people had friends in the app, but it wasn't an Instagram type thing. It was like most people didn't know anybody else in the app, but some people did. And so we kept on trying to figure out, okay, how do we serve content to people in a way that they find interesting, but also isn't just showing them exactly the same people, because that's boring. And so I remember I was having a conversation with my CTO, and we're like, well, okay, so what do we prioritize that people see? Do we prioritize that people see their friends? Do we prioritize that people see the people who are voted the most stylish consistently? Do we prioritize that people see the new users? Because, you know, like fresh blood. And we were having this discussion, and he said something like, well, you know, why don't we just vary it? And so we literally got a piece of paper, and we were like, okay, so if we have friend followed by new person, followed by like most stylish, like and then we kind of just have this variation just like this, like, and so the most important people are friends, and then the least important people are kind of the most stylish. We're like, well, we don't know. Let's use this logic. Let's release it and see what happens. And then as I realized later, he was like, oh, okay, so this is basically the new content algorithm prototype. Let's release this prototype and A/B test it. And I was like, oh my God, I have just I've just done that. Really?
Easy as that. Well, not even. Yeah, it's fantastic.
And you see, the thing that I just explained to you everybody could follow it, right? And you could also see that I didn't know the answer. There is no right answer. Because, you know, some of our friends are really stylish and I want to see what they're wearing. Other people, I'm like, I love you, but, you know, whatever.
I'm not wearing that.
Yeah. I love you, but not because of, you know, what you wear. And so you make these assumptions. And then what an engineer does is they work with you to help you understand the assumptions that you're making. So you can really kind of put those assumptions basically into a bunch of mathematical equations. Yeah. And then those mathematical equations become code. And then, you know, you serve the algorithm, you serve that content, and then you see, okay, are people engaging more or are people engaging less? And then you see, okay, people are really interested in this kind of thing, they're really not interested in this kind of thing. And then you alter it. And I think, you know, this is a really great example for a podcast that's going to be listened to primarily by women, because nothing that I just said is particularly technical. And nothing that I just said is something that, you know, you can't do. Because it's just logic. Like, if you are capable of, you know, having a job, you're capable of logic. And so then you're capable of questioning the algorithm, and you're capable of essentially saying, what data has gone into making this algorithm? Is there equal amount of data of men and women, for example? You could ask, okay, is this algorithm reproducing past data? Because this is important, because right now in our world, we live in a very unequal society. You know, in the UK, female founders only get 2% of venture capital funding. The gender pay gap is enormous. You know, there's so like we right now live in a society that is getting better, but phenomenally slowly. So if we have an algorithm that basically takes what we have and says, oh, let's carry on doing that, I'm not on board.
We need to make the change.
I don't. Yeah. And so we can literally say, is this algorithm using past data and just extrapolating it to the future? And then if they say yes, you can think, well, is this what we want? Or do we essentially want to program the future that we want? Because sometimes we do.
So there are many opportunities for women. This, you've made me really excited about this journey that I'm starting as well. And hopefully our audience is going to come with us just to learn more about AI and how we can empower women to use it and how it impacts on us and how we can be part of changing it and making it better for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, the main thing is just don't put anybody on a pedestal. I think we have this tendency to put, you know, somebody who's like an AI engineer onto a pedestal. And they're probably really good at what they do, but they don't have your perspective and they need your perspective. So, you know, they might be as terrified of you as you are of them. So offer them your perspective, you know, kindly and politely, but offer them your perspective because they'll probably benefit from it.
They may be the experts in building it, but they need the input. And it's only ever going to be as good as the people that have input the data or input the thoughts
into where it's going.
Exactly. But
thank you, Sophia. I mean, where can our audience learn more about this? Have you got any recommendations for podcasts or books or people to listen to?
So obviously, the Tech Fun and Techies podcast.
The link will be in the show notes.
Listen to the Tech Fun and Techies podcast and follow me on LinkedIn. So I put up lots of stuff on AI, but also on technology in general on there. And there is a book called Competing in the Age of AI. Hang on, I'm just going to make sure that I get the full name of it. It's Competing in the Age of AI. Competing in the Age of AI, Strategy and Leadership When Algorithms and Networks Run the World. So it's quite a thick read, so you're not going to want to have it on the beach. I interviewed one of the authors and I did a book summary on my podcast, if you can't be bothered to read the whole book. But the book is really, really good because it's written by two Harvard Business School professors and it's about AI, but from a business perspective. So yes, it teaches you basically what algorithms are, but it's not a computer science text. So yes, like, you know, I've read it with a highlighter and lots of post-its, but definitely as a non-technical person with a business background, you will be able to understand it.
That's fantastic. Thank you. And you mentioned people can find you on LinkedIn. So we'll put some links up and all your tags in the show notes. But thank you for coming on Women with AI. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. I've learned a lot. So thank you.
I loved it. And everybody listen to this. Happy International
Women's Day.
Thank you, Joe.
Oh, why frozen again? Okay, good. So apologies if I spoke over you or just sat there silent.
Oh no, that happens with Riverside. Don't worry about it.
But no, thank you.
Okay, so yeah. Awesome. Well, this was great. Well done, Joe.